Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
My dad struggled his whole life with alcohol addiction, and I lost my dad to dementia just over 2 years ago. And it's definitely, you know, as an adult, it's still a struggle to figure out how to deal with the trauma from growing up in that environment. And it's a tough thing, but so many people deal with it, and that's why I talked about it in the book.
Six-time Olympic medalist in two different sports, Clara Hughes, with us in studio between 3:30 and 4 this afternoon.
It makes me sad to even be talking about it because it still feels so wrong. But at the same time, I realize, and I've had so much feedback from people that I live the same thing. This could have been me. And it makes me feel so good to know that people have connected to that, and I hope gained some strength themselves to start dealing with their own issues.
Some gut-wrenching moments in studio and in the book, Open Heart, Open Mind, by Clara Hughes. For those who missed it earlier, we will replay a portion of it between 5:30 and 6. Welcome back. Hour number 3, Melnick in the Afternoon on Game Night, Habs and Capitals at the Bell Center, along with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick with you. Until then, David Trentadue helping us out, and right now we talk hockey with Pierre McGuire.
Pierre McGuire on TSN 690 is brought to you by the Dagwood Sandwich Experience. Top quality meats and cheeses, freshly baked bread, veggies in special sauce. Dagwood's, a Montreal original for over 25 years.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Mitch. By the way, congratulations on that interview and those sound bites. Those are amazingly frank and obviously painful memories for somebody, and for you to be able to get that out of a guest is pretty amazing. It really is. That's spectacular stuff. That's going to help a lot of people.
Oh,
lot of people.
Wherever she goes, whenever she speaks, it's immediate. And she's been on this book tour, as you know. And last night she was at Indigo downtown here, and she got to meet her hero. The reason she went into speed skating was Gaétan Boucher. And he showed up last night, and a lot of people, they need to share their stories with her. And it's therapeutic for a lot of people to know that she's been through it.
Well, again, it makes everybody feel a little bit stronger and a little bit braver to have to go through that when they know that somebody that's at another level, especially athletically, has gone through the very same things and been able to overcome it. That was really awesome to listen to. I appreciated that so much. I didn't hear the whole interview because I'm in a meeting with the National Hockey League right now, and I just walked out of it. But that was fantastic stuff. Congratulations to you and your whole team.
What are you meeting about?
Oh, we do this every year. It's a symposium that we do with the league, and we break down tape, and we talk about a lot of different things that we liked from last season, that we didn't like from last season. Speaking of therapeutic, it's put together by Mark Lazarus, the head of NBC Sports, and Sam Flood, the executive producer of the NHL and NBC. And it's been a fantastic exercise. You know, I just visited with Chris Pronger and Chris King and Colin Campbell and, you know, guys that I've known for over 25 years in the league. So it's been great, really good.
But what do you decide things at this symposium? Like, what is it for?
No, we talk. Well, for instance, we ask questions of the league, ask questions about expansion, ask questions about new rules. They ask us questions about how we process different pieces of information. We talked about the coaches' challenge this year, you know, and I think you know that I've been a pretty strong proponent of the coaches' challenge for a long time. And the one thing the league did ask for is to say it's a work in progress, like everything else they do, and there's going to be some ironing out that has to happen. And I completely respect that. They're not afraid to hide behind, well, you know, you got to just listen to us and trust us. No, they're saying, listen, this is a work in progress. We appreciate any feedback you can give us on it. So, no, it's I think these meetings we have with the league, and this is the start of our 11th year at NBC with the league as partners. And I have to tell you, every time we do it, it just keeps getting better and better all the time. It's a delight to do it.
Well, I noticed a tweet earlier, and let's clear this up. Pierre McGuire, you are or are not on Twitter.
I am not on Twitter.
All right. So for those of you who maintain that Pierre's on Twitter, there could be a phony account. It could be a mock account, a parody account. Pierre is not on Twitter.
I am not on Twitter, never have been on Twitter, and never will be on Twitter. In fact, Twitter's had to apologize to me on numerous occasions. In fact, one of the people that works here at NBC, it's pretty interesting, his girlfriend works and is a big executive at Twitter in San Francisco. And it's troubled her to no end that she has to continually apologize to me because they thought they had this thing figured out, but they do not.
Okay, well, Darren Drager is on Twitter, and he tweeted something about Marty St. Louis being at this NBC event. So that's
correct.
What he's referring to.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Marty St. Louis and I were there, and we put on a presentation for the entire room. And it was about what players like and don't like about broadcast. It was about his career as a player. It was about what he likes about the new game compared to when he broke into the league, what he doesn't like. It was about the original triplets. I said to him, I said, you're one of the original triplets. Nobody talked about that last year. It was you, Richards, and LeCavalier. Now everybody's talking about Kucherov and Palat and Tyler Dodson. He said, you know what the coolest part about that pair? I played with all three of those kids. And he says, I think they're going to be great. Marty St. Louis was fantastic for about 12 to 15 minutes.
Does he have aspirations to join you at NBC or become a broadcaster?
I don't think so. Right now, he's really enjoying his family and what he's doing more than anything else. I see him at the rink all the time because our boys are part of the same program at Mid-Fairfield. It's called the Mid-Fairfield Junior Rangers. I see Marty all the time. He's working at the rink. I can't see anything happening this year with that for him. I think he's really comfortable with his family and what he's trying to accomplish as a father and as a husband. And I may be down the road, but I'm a huge fan, and I'd like to think we're friends. And he was great today. He was outstanding.
Well, let me ask you something. If I was there, I would have asked somebody at the NHL.
Skating forward to the Habs line, hands it off. Boys coming in right side of the front. Gardner scores. Well, that didn't take very long. 16 seconds, Gardner scores on the power play, and the Leafs win it 2-1.
Dan Robertson with the call the other night. We were all led to believe that we'd see 3-on-3 no matter what. And even Ray Ferraro, who was working the game, as you know, for TSN, he thought, okay, the game's over. It's in the books. I'll be in an exhibition game. Now let's see 3-on-3. And we didn't see it. Isn't the purpose of this, these games that are earmarked to have 3-on-3 to give the players some kind of feel about what they are going to have to go through?
Absolutely. In fact, I watched the game last night between the New York Islanders and the New Jersey Devils from the building in Brooklyn. And even though the Devils lost the game 2-1, Tyler Kennedy in the rehearsal that you're talking about, 3-on-3, scored a goal for New Jersey. And he's there in a professional tryout. It was a huge moment for him because he's battling with Lee Stempniak to try to get a job, and Stempniak's on a PTO too, and he scored earlier in the game for New Jersey. So I think most games are actually doing a 3-on-3, as far as I know.
Yeah, it just seemed it just seemed odd that we now again, if there is a penalty, it reverts to 4-on-3. I get
that. Well, if there's a penalty, it goes right to 4-on-3.
Yeah, I get that, but okay, so the game ended after 16 seconds. There's plenty of time to do 3-on-3. I felt robbed. I didn't pay for anything, but that's the only reason I tuned in was to see 3-on-3.
You know what? Speaking of tuning in, I was just talking to Chris King, who played in Winnipeg, and the boards used to be very, very fast in the old building in Winnipeg, and spent a lot of years playing in Edmonton, where the boards were unbelievably quick in the old Northlands Coliseum. The boards in Brooklyn remind me so much of Joe Louis in terms of how the pucks carom off it. That's something that's going to be very interesting to watch for a lot of people going in there for the first time.
How is everything else about the rink? I'm curious because there were some concerns expressed that it's a basketball arena first and it's not totally conducive for hockey.
I haven't heard any complaints yet, and people at the league seem really happy. The Islander season ticket holders, based on the numbers I was just given, 40% renewal. Now, when you think about it, that's a huge number of renewal just from Long Island season ticket holders because of how far the distance is for probably most of them to have to commute just to go to a game in Brooklyn. So I would imagine that you're going to start to see a lot of corporations that have house themselves either down on Wall Street that couldn't get into the Rangers or in Brooklyn now, which has become a very fashionable place again. I think you'll see their season ticket sales actually start to ramp up. So they're excited about everything that's gone on in Brooklyn, and I haven't heard any complaints today anyways about the building in Brooklyn.
Well, you make, Pierre, of the story that the Islander players are actually taking the train to games so that they could, travel like Long Islanders.
Well, I think they're doing it, too, because anybody that's been here knows the traffic on the LIE to get into New York is not easy to have to battle, especially in the morning commute on the day of a game skate. So that will be something to watch, Mitch Gallo. That'll be interesting because certain guys live in certain areas, and they still practice out on Long Island. So, it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch as we go forward here.
And just to wrap up Mitch's point on the three-on-three, so far in the exhibition season, we've had 23 three-on-three overtime periods. A goal has been scored in 19 of the 23 overtimes.
I'm curious what the average length of the... I'm sure it's pretty quick, right?
Yeah,
it's very quick.
The times now, and 36 seconds, 39 seconds, 39, 57 seconds, 12 seconds, 16 seconds, 55 seconds.
So there's no question this is going to have the desired effect, and that's less
shooting.
Everybody's
excited. You and I talked about this for a long time, and it's Kenny Holland's idea. Kenny Holland deserves a ton of credit on this. He was the visionary that really pushed and prodded for this and was able to get some of the other younger general managers in particular to jump on board. But it's Kenny Holland, the great general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, that really put this thing together.
All right, tonight, Pierre, the Canadians, for the first time, will ice the line of Alex Galchenyuk, Alex Semin, and Lars Eller. This is opening night for these guys.
All right.
They've practiced together. It's the only one game, but is it important? Do you think it's important for them to be comfortable right away and click, even if it doesn't result in goals, but to actually look good as a trio?
Making plays matters more than scoring goals, and especially coming out of your own zone. Dominating your own zone coming out and dominating in the neutral zone will really go to a long way of establishing whether they're going to work as a line or not. If you don't see a lot of cohesion coming out of their own zone, or you don't see a lot of cohesion coming through the neutral zone, then I think probably it's going to be a much harder and longer experiment than a lot of people think. I'm not so worried about the goals. I want to see the cohesion coming out of their own zone and going through the neutral zone.
Do some marginal veterans or young veterans, will say, use exhibition games, Pierre, in order to gain that extra ice time, whether it's when you're down by a goal late, or whether it's power play ice time, kind of that candy ice time? Is this a chance to convince your coach that you're worthy?
Yes, absolutely. That's a very valid point. I've seen that through so many different training camps. For the younger ones that are just trying to break in, that have had 1 or 2 years of professional experience at the American League level, it's their opportunity to really show the coaches that they have progressed and they are ready. For the ones that have been in the NHL 2 to 3 or maybe 4 years and have been depth players, I'll use Matt Bolesky last year in Anaheim. Had a fantastic camp, earned a way onto playing a lot of games, not all of them, but a lot of games, sometimes with Getzlaff and Perry, other times with Ryan Kessler. But earned his way up to more ice time. Rather than being a depth player, he was more of a top six forward. He eventually got 22 goals playing for them and was a key component in their success last year, and it got him a huge contract in Boston. So, yeah, that matters a ton. It's a great, great point.
Yuri Sikach, 2 goals in his first game. With Pierre McGuire every afternoon after 5 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Here was Pierre yesterday.
If he could be their fourth line center, let's just say for the sake of argument, fourth line center, and maybe even their third. That's a huge piece of news for Montreal. Huge going forward. Gigantic.
Yeah, it feels good. It's my second game now, and got to continue to build off my last game, and I'm excited.
Okay, so how does he do that tonight?
Don't fall back. Don't be a defensive liability. That's what they're looking for from him. It's not so much about the points. It's about what are his strengths. So his strengths are his size. And for a bigger person, he skates relatively well, and he's pretty solid in face-off play. So establish yourself to those criteria pretty quick. Be fast to the puck. Don't get beat. Don't turn pucks over. Don't be a defensive liability. Win face-offs. Communicate in penalty kill situations, but be smart. That's how he's going to make the team. If he plays smart and under control, he will make the team.
Pierre, how much harder is it for a coaching staff to evaluate a player if he's not playing on a line with other NHL guys, if he's centering 2 wingers tonight who are going to be in the American Hockey League?
I don't worry about that. I worry about what his responsibilities are. So the Canes coaches know their in-zone coverage schemes. They know their face-off schemes. And so if he lives up to what he's supposed to do in those situations, that's huge. That's what he needs to do. And quite frankly, Mitch Gallo, if he were to thrive playing with lesser players, that would even help him more. I think that's maybe part of the test. I talk about Jake Gardner and Morgan Riley and Nazem Kadri going through this test that Mike Babcock's created for them in Toronto to see if they can live up to his expectation. I think maybe for Michael McCarron, part of his test is going to be having to play maybe with lesser players against good players and prove that he belongs.
Yeah, it feels good. It's my second game now, and got to continue to build off my last game, and I'm excited.
I think you might have been able to tell by my reaction to what you said yesterday about McCarron-Pierre that I was a little surprised and very intrigued that you think he's got a shot here to make the team in his first year as a pro.
Because, and I think this is really important, because he's got something the Canadiens are desperate for, and he's not a cap breaker, and that is size and strength. They desperately need that. And Mitch, I go around, I'm sitting there, Colin Campbell's obviously a very good friend. We competed against each other a ton over the course of our careers, and we talk a fair bit. And I will tell you this, his son Gregory signed with Columbus. I said, you know what? Gregory won a cup in Boston. Columbus got another chance to win the cup for your son. I told Colin that about 40 minutes ago. I said, I think Columbus is going to be a beast. Part of why they're going to be a beast, they're big. They're big, and they're strong, and they're mobile, and they're probably going to stay healthy, and they're going to be very problematic to play against.
They're a good team. They may not stay completely healthy, but there's no way they can go through what they went through a year ago.
So size matters. Look at Pittsburgh. They're not a small team. Look at Florida. They're not a small team. Tampa is smaller, but look at some of the bigger people that are playing at depth positions for them. They've got some humongous people, including Brian Boyle. He's 6'7". They got some huge folks. They got a defenseman who's 6'9", in Andre Schuster.
Yeah, they got a pretty big goalie, too.
They do. They've got two big goalies. So here's the deal on them. Their skilled players are not relatively large, but they're still, their depth players are big. So if you're looking at the iron of the Eastern Conference, these teams are big. They've got big people. And if you don't have big people, it's tough to beat them.
Can coaches also use September exhibition games to put their players in a position where you challenge them? Maybe you give them an assignment, whereas normally it would be Plekanec up against Kuznetsov, whereas now it could be McCarron in a given situation.
Well, that's exactly right. Again, strong day for you, Rod. Call Vegas. You know,
he's making up for yesterday.
Okay. That's exactly right. Create a role for the player that potentially he could have to play that role during the regular season. And see how he responds to the bright lights and obviously the energy of the Bell Center. And that's a huge thing. I totally agree with that. That's really well said.
You want to keep going, Rod? Keep going.
No,
hey, when you're ahead, Mitch, when you're ahead.
You got to know when to quit. All right, so David Desharnais is playing tonight alongside, in between Dale Weiss and Thomas Fleischmann. He right now is circled as the number three center on the Montreal Canadiens. Can that work?
I would say probably not if they're going to be a legitimate contender. I think they know that, and he probably knows that. It's not a knock on the player. The player is better suited to be either a top six forward or if he's going to play as a depth player, playing as a winger. Because down low coverage, when you're talking the 3-4 hole, down low coverage becomes very, very difficult. Very difficult.
And Pierre, a player who, when he was drafted, told me that he modeled himself after David Desharnais' game. And we're going to see Charles Hudon for the first time in the preseason. And I'm just wondering, because, you know, what you just said before about size, especially at depth positions, obviously it's clear in the NHL right now. What do you do with a guy like Hudon, who in his first year pro, he had 57 points?
Just keep encouraging him to be a real good offensive player. You can't fight the size thing. That's what Marty St. Louis and I were talking about, that, you know, God gave him what he gave him, and then he had to take advantage of what he had. And one of the things that he had was a steely determination to prove people wrong, that small guys can play in the league. And this other thing that he did is his work habits were impeccable. So because he was such a hard worker, he was able to overcome that size problem. And I was, if I were to tell Charles to know anything, it would be, use Marty St. Louis and David Desharnais as role models because they're both perfect for you.
Yeah, I'm sure they know. I'm sure Marc Bergevin and Michel Therrien knows that I can play left winger, center. So that's a good thing, a good point for me, a good thing in my baggage.
Charles Hudon at center tonight between Brian Flynn and Sven Andraghetto. Much more coming up after 6. And Dan Robertson and Sergio Mamessa with the play-by-play. Puck drops a little after 7:35. Thanks as always, Pierre. Do it again tomorrow.
Yes, I'll be driving to Syracuse, New York tomorrow. So we'll be doing it from the cell phone in the car. Look forward to it. Thank you, sir. Enjoy the game tonight, everybody.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.